Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh, yeah, we started to burn too many things we found. That's the wonderful Dora Williams. I just bought her book at Barnes & Noble. She's a terrific, it's a brilliant book, actually, by Dora Williams. Title escapes me at the moment, but I'm going to have her on this show to talk about it. We are talking today with the great Danny Sheehan and Sarah Nelson, they of the Romero Institute in Santa Cruz, California. They have been with us a couple weeks ago. I had them on, and we barely scratched the surface here. These are two tremendous lifelong activists. Sounds like somebody's doing the dishes in the background there. we barely covered, barely scratched the surface of the things they're working on. I've known these folks for 40, 50 years. Something like that, but we want to take up again today with the Dakota Pipeline. We're going to talk about Iran-Contra and how these folks helped break that scandal, which changed American history. I want to talk a bit about Karen Silkwood and the nuclear power industry. I want to finish up with Sarah. Sarah's had a remarkable and successful struggle against cancer, and I just got news of good friend of mine who's been struggling with lung cancer for years and years is now cancer-free. So Sarah has a lot to teach about that as well. And so it's a packed hour with Sarah Nelson and Danny Sheehan. Danny, you with us?
I'm right here. I'm right here, Sluggo.
Okay. And Sarah? Sarah, are you there?
Hi, Sluggo. I'm right here.
Okay. You guys are calling me Sluggo. That's my baseball name. I appreciate it.
His name
whenever people bring up my fabled sports career of many years ago, I tell all my friends that I was a really great baseball player, and I find that the older I get, the better I was. So talk to me in 10 years, and I'll tell you about how I played for the Red Sox.
Won the World Series.
20 years ago, I'll tell you how I won Wimbledon. All that. But Danny, you were actually a football player, right?
Yes, football and baseball in college.
And can you still walk?
I can. Yeah. Well, there's one with a bad knee. I don't know how that ever happened.
Oh, yeah, it's just probably one of those marriage things.
But, vicarious sympathy, that's right.
Yes, exactly. So let's start again. We did pretty much a full hour 2 weeks ago on the Dakota Pipeline, and this, I don't think we got too deep into the RICO suit. So if you'll tell us the latest on the Dakota Pipeline, what's happening. My understanding is, and I think we finished with this actually, that the hurricane has pretty much neutralized all the ridiculous refineries that they're building the pipeline to send the crude to, and now they're talking about sending it to Illinois and shipping it out the Great Lakes. Is anything new development on that?
Well, they were planning to put the pipeline down through into Illinois anyway, and then just pipe it from there down south. But given the fact that there's a depot there, and they've closed down the refineries down in the Gulf Coast, what they're doing is they're storing the fuel there, the crude oil, and they're actually now in the process of talking about refining some of it there and shipping it out through the Great Lakes in order to maintain the flow of oil. The Trump administration has made a decision to basically double down and triple down on the actual production of oil in the entire United States. They've acknowledged now publicly that there's no more energy crisis in the United States that they were crabbing about before under Obama. There's this terrible energy crisis in the United States. We have to double down on the production of our own oil so as to be independent of the need for other oil around the world. And then as soon as Trump got in and ordered the going forward with the Dakota pipeline and the XL pipeline, he said, oh, we now no longer have any energy emergency. And what we're really doing now is dedicating ourselves to establishing full dominance over the energy industry in the world. And that's our objective now. So he's issued executive orders opening up all of the Indian reservations to oil drilling and coal mining and uranium mining, all of the national parks, and all of the shorelines. Now, he's issued executive orders authorizing the building of oil platforms all along the east and western coasts and the Gulf Coast again. So they're actually just going hog wild now, since they've got him in the White House, and he's got the power of the pen of the executive orders, and he's just swooping in on this stuff now. So that they want to keep the oil flowing. So even though they've had this catastrophe down on the Gulf Coast with a lot of their refineries, the Gulf Coast, what they're doing now is they're trying to temporarily at least move this oil into being refined in Illinois and shipped out through the Great Lakes. That's what's happening.
And who's it going to go to?
It's going to the foreign market, wherever it is they can get the most money for the oil. And as people know, if they've traveled in Europe, you know, you pull up to a gas station in the Netherlands or something like that, and it costs like $6 a gallon, you know, and $7 a gallon. And so that they can make twice as much money off from it by selling it in various European and foreign countries. And that's why Russia is now talking about building a huge pipeline instead of that pipeline that was going to go from the Caspian Sea all the way down into the Arabian Sea, that big 1,200-mile pipeline that they were having to fight with the Taliban about. Now they're talking about putting a pipeline in going into Eastern Europe and moving the Russian oil through a major pipeline into Eastern Europe to that way. So people keep wondering, why is it that Trump is trying to establish this kind of cozy relationship with Russia, and why is Tillerson in the middle of this as the Secretary of State? Why is he getting the Russian Friendship Award? That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to bring all of that oil from Russia and all the oil and natural gas from the United States into a major total domination of the energy in the world, so as to push back against the global climate change movement. That's what's happening. This is a huge counteroffensive that is being mounted by the American Petroleum Institute. That's what's happening here.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's like a bad dream.
It is a bad dream.
And meanwhile, the renewable industry is just pushing ahead, being pushed back, of course.
Oh, yeah, they're cutting all of the subsidies out of that, you know, treating it as a total hoax, you know, and the only question again remains is how much structural damage is going to be done before they make the decision to get him out of there. You know, and if they allow, because they want to sustain the two-party system and maintain the stability of that, the Democrats may be just sort of basically biding their time until he terms out at the end of 4 years. But there's such disaster will be imposed upon the world during that time that they've got the plan B, which is the whole investigation by Mueller, to see if they can get him to resign ahead of time by making his life so miserable that he'll quit.
God, you know, but the Democrats are so utterly worthless. I mean, I just did the, I subjected myself to the torture of reading Hillary's book cover to cover.
Oh.
And, you know, it's the hardest thing I've done since I had to go see this movie, San Andreas, because there was no mention of the nuclear power plants in there in California in the middle of an earthquake, but I haven't been sure that was the case. And I missed the second game of the first NBA finals between the Cavs and the Golden State. I'll never get over that one. But then I had to read Hillary's book. I mean, I need serious psychotherapy after doing that. But
you have to send us a Precy, Sligo, because we haven't been able to do it ourselves.
Yeah, well, spare yourself. And you know, she just blames Putin. She blames Comey. She blames Bernie. It's outrageous. She totally attacks Bernie Sanders, never mentions the movement that he was had helped spark. But we won't get into that. So are they now pushing ahead further with what is actually happening to the actual Dakota Pipeline?
Well, the Dakota Pipeline is still in operation. They completed it. They've got it in operation. It's pumping 910,000 gallons of crude oil an hour through it down into Illinois. There's an action in front of the Washington D.C. Court, the federal district court in Washington D.C., explicitly demanding the imposition of an injunction. But the judge keeps saying, well, okay, it was illegal for them to complete that because they hadn't addressed major fundamental aspects of the environmental protection laws, but he's refusing to issue an order setting aside or vacating the actual easement that was issued. You know,
he said it was illegal, but he's not going to break the law.
That's right. He's acknowledged that it was unlawful for them to continue to complete it, but he's refusing to enter an order vacating the issuance of the easement. And so he's allowing the pipeline to continue functioning. In 999 cases out of 100, whenever there's a ruling that an easement was granted unlawfully, then the court automatically sets it aside, which is logical. But in this particular case, he's citing a couple extraneous cases where, for example, there were a couple spots where an injunction was asked for, and they said, oh, well, you know, if it's granted, it's going to require tens of thousands of people to pay back the rebates that they got. It's too complicated, so we're not going to be able to do it, and we can't basically put the toothpaste back into the tube. And that doesn't apply to this case. All they have to do is order the pipeline to be shut off. And that's all he has to do, but he won't do it. As I said, Judge Bozeman, who is the judge, is a Yale graduate. He's a member of Skull and Bones. He's a member of the William Bennett Williams Inn, a big private legal club of all white male lawyers who are criminal defense attorneys for corporate criminals. That's a club, and he's a member of the club. And he's just bending over backwards trying to figure out how he can avoid having to follow the law in this thing. But he's holding the case in his court by extending briefing schedules, et cetera, for Energy Transfer to try to give him any excuse he can get to not revoke the pipeline easement. So there's not really much likely prospect of being able to prevail with him, even though he was forced to acknowledge that it was unlawful for them to go forward because they refused to even address, you know, a half a dozen major issues that are legally mandated under the Environmental Protection Act. So, you know, and very importantly, as we know, there's 103 federal judicial seats sitting empty because the Republicans, when they took over the United States Senate in the second term of Obama, and Orrin Hatch was made the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he's just flat out refused to hold any hearings whatsoever on any of the nominees of Obama. And so they've got backed up now 103 federal judgeships that are sitting empty because the people have retired. And now with all of the other distractions that are going on, one of the things that the Trump administration is doing is nominating hardcore right-wing members of the Federalist Society. They're going and finding former law clerks for Justice Scalia and for Rehnquist and all of these people, these hardcore right-wing lawyers, to try to appoint them in as young as possible so that they can seize complete control over the judicial system for the next 40 years. And this is one of the many, many costs that are entailed in allowing this guy to stay in office even one more day.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all because of stolen elections. And I'm mostly the way through a piece I'm putting out now about how, you know, reading Hillary's book, you know, if Donald Trump had won the popular vote by 3 million votes and the exit polls in Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, he wouldn't have spent the next day walking his dog. I mean, he'd have been in there fighting tooth and nail for the presidency, and Hillary just, you know, walked away whining and moaning about Comey and Bernie.
It's the same thing that John Kerry did. I mean, John Kerry did the same thing. You know, John Edwards was listening to all the information that we had about the fraud that was performed in Florida and in Ohio, you know, with all Blackwell and his doctoring of the machines in Ohio, et cetera. And John Kerry just went forward. I worked for John Edwards in the primary in 2008 in Iowa. And so we were in regular communication with him. We were giving him all the information that showed the fraud that had been committed in Ohio with Blackwell and you know, Michael Connell and that entire issue. And Edwards cornered John Kerry in a bathroom, actually, right after the night of election, said, do not concede this thing. You know, there's all kinds of evidence coming in now about the fraud. And John Kerry, he was basically had him up against the wall. You know, here he is, John Edwards, like about, you know, 5'8" or so, with John Kerry 6'2". He's got him up against the wall, forcing him to promise he won't concede the election. And Kerry agreed with him. And they went to bed, and Kerry got up at 6 o'clock and issued a concession.
You know, he stopped
us all from doing anything.
And the same with Al Gore. I mean, Gore in 2000 has never said a word about the 90,000 blacks and Hispanics that were stripped off the voter rolls or the flipping of the electronic voting machines. Man, it's infuriating.
It's because they want to maintain blind confidence on the part of the American people in the two-party system, and that they don't want any of the people to come together and realize, wait a second, these two parties are basically playing ping pong here back and forth, and on, you know, 75% of all of the issues they completely agree, and then they have these pseudo arguments in public about the differences that are not insignificant. I mean, these are not, like, for example, the judicial appointments. It's absolutely clear if Hillary had won the election that these 103 federal judgeships would be going to genuinely liberal and even some progressive people. And now they're all going to be appointed to these reactionaries. So it does make some significant difference. But everybody needs to remember that Hillary Clinton was the chairperson of the Democratic Leadership Conference, you know, policy committee. She plighted her troth with that whole group of people that set up the Democratic Leadership Conference at the end of the Cold War, and they want to establish a new, more moderate Democratic Party, and they want to eliminate virtually all of the FDR restrictions on rampant capitalism and the environmental protection regulations and all of that. And so the regular Democratic Party, has plighted its troth with that more conservative position, and they've left open now this entire opening about having a justice Democratic Party that is basically going to put forth a full platform to the Democratic Party Platform Committee at the 2020 National Convention and fill in an entire platform and confront the Democratic Party with it. And so, look, here are the policies that the American people want. Here's the statistical evidence showing the overwhelming support on the part of the vast majority of people for these policies. Now, the Democratic Party has to step up, fill in that vacuum, and have a progressive party. That's the move that's underway right now, and that's what really has to be supported.
Well, I think the Schumer-Pelosi leadership of the Democratic Party is much more comfortable with Donald Trump in the White House than they are with Bernie Sanders and with the progressive wing of the party. And, you know, when Hillary complains about the Russians, and the leaks were proving that the Democratic Party had stiffed Bernie. But she, nowhere in her book, and I'll spare you the torture, nowhere in her book does she say anything about the grassroots movement. She yips and moans about Bernie this and Bernie that, and, as if he exists in a vacuum.
Yep.
And she never talks about the 30 million people who were in the streets supporting a progressive, agenda in this country.
That's right.
And Bernie Sanders got 10 times more votes, 30 times more votes than Eugene V. Debs did 100 years ago. Now,
yes.
Bernie calls himself a socialist. He's really basically a New Deal Democrat.
Yes,
but,
that's right. He's an FDR Democrat.
Right.
Yeah, and that's too much for Hillary and and Gore and Kerry. And I'm coming out with this piece. You'll see it tomorrow. Basically it's Gore and Kerry and Clinton, the Clintons, who put Trump in the White House. And they're the ones responsible because they allowed their elections to be stolen and have yet to say a word about any of it. So we're with Danny Sheehan and Sarah Nelson. So what do we do? And then we're going to move on. I want to talk about Iran-Contra. But what do we do now about the pipelines and all this crazed? This is the last gasp of King Kong, coal, oil, nukes, and gas. Because the people that Trump represents and is owned by, including Putin, are vested in fossil fuels and nuclear power.
Yes.
And we're in the midst now. We're really beyond the cusp. I mean, we are deep, deep into the revolution in renewable energy, which is transforming the entire energy technology sector. But these guys, are pushing back with all their might. How do we get over this hump?
Okay. Well, Hari, I'd like to contribute to this discussion by saying we have to be vigilant now. We each one of us needs to be in motion. Each one of us needs to be doing something now to move us into renewables and out of fossil fuels. I mean, because we can't rely on the leaders, not internationally or nationally, even though many people are trying to push forward with the Paris Accords and stuff, we have to realize our president and the leaders of our Congress now are not our allies when it comes to protecting the earth and humanity from the coming cascading effects of climate change, which are going to, Houston and Florida and the Caribbean, this is just the beginning in terms of the size of the storms and the impact of them, not to mention the dozens and dozens and dozens of fires that were happening simultaneously. And this is the beginning of the effects of climate change. So it's up to the people now. We, the people, have to take action. And we can do it wherever we are by moving into renewables ourselves, getting our cities to move into to declare that they're going to go solar in the city, that we can do it in our states, we can do it in our homes. So we can go renewable, solar and wind, and we can also oppose and defeat in any way we can the oil industry. And one way we can do that is by supporting what's going on, the fight at Standing Rock and DAPL, because the other side, the oil industry, is trying to set precedents in that whole litigative struggle up there. They're trying to set precedents that will make it easy for them to suppress future protesting that has anything to do with the oil industry or the pipelines. So we need to win those legal battles, and that's why we're up there. We're defending Chase Iron Eyes and Holy Elk. Chase is the most identified leader by the energy industry. They want to make an example out of him, and he's the only one charged with inciting a riot, which he did not do. In fact, all the people who have been charged up there are not guilty of the things that they're charged with. So we've got peaceful protesters being treated like jihadist terrorists and being prosecuted month after month after month when they didn't do anything wrong. And we need to defeat that entire effort. And right now, of the 843 people, there are about 360 left that have to complete their trials. Some of these trials are as far in the future as May. This is an ongoing unfair prosecution, and the people who really broke the laws were the Energy Transfer Company and Tiger Swan, their private militarized security company, an offshoot of Blackwater, that was running a bogus military operation up there and telling the media and all of the other law enforcement agencies that we all have to have our military plan, our battle plan for tomorrow, and they were running these nightly meetings because we have domestic terrorists that we are dealing with here and who are religiously motivated. I mean, it was preposterous, and it cost $38 million to do their plan, much of which I'm sure went to them. And we need to defeat that because the oil industry is going to use those precedents against all of us, not just in the United States, but in the world, as to how to keep us from opposing them. Our future, the future of the planet, depends on reducing our use of fossil fuels, not expanding it. The industry is trying to expand into the Arctic, into the parks, into all the Indian lands. They want to expand fossil fuels. It's ridiculous. It's the exact opposite of what is needed for life on the planet right now. We need to be reducing our dependence on fossil fuels and shifting over to renewables as fast as we can. And that is the only thing that is going to bring down the scale of disaster that's coming. In other words, the more we bring down our emissions, the less powerful the storms will be. You know, it's gotten to be just that simple. So if people go to our website greenpower.ngo, that's our whole program on bringing in renewables, and we will work with people anywhere on how to take steps to implement action on the level of their home, their community, their state, because we know very specific things that people can do. That's greenpower.ngo. And if they want to confront the oil industry, they should go to LakotaLaw.org, and they should sign our petition immediately that goes to the state attorney in Martin County in North Dakota, telling him to dismiss all the charges against the water protectors because they're innocent, and it's a total injustice that they keep prosecuting these people. And we want them to drop the charges on all 843 people and stop prosecuting and persecuting peaceful water protectors.
Well, one thing that's interesting is that they, you know, while these idiots are pumping out the fossil fuels, coal, oil, nukes, and gas, and nukes, of course, are a big part of it, the technology is going so far in the other direction that you now have whole countries starting to ban gas-fired automobiles, and Volkswagen and Mercedes and other companies announcing that they're no longer going to build internal combustion engines. What are they going to do with this oil? Are they going to bathe in it? Now, one thing that you've done, Sarah and Danny, and I want you to talk about now is, so we don't lose track, is the community choice aggregation strategy. You are in Northern California. California yes. has a, and I'm in L.A., and we're doing this in L.A. also. I'm working with a guy named Mark Summer. I don't know if you know Mark, but you should connect with him. He's been on my show at PRN and at KPFK. To tell us what community choice aggregation is, how it works, and how people can make use of it themselves.
Oh, well, this is a very, very exciting program that makes it possible to reduce a lot of carbon very quickly. Here's what it is. There are 7 states right now that have CCA laws, community choice aggregation laws. We have one here in California, Illinois, Ohio, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island all have these laws. Ours is the most, I would say the California one is the most visionary program and determined program to go all renewable in our energy as fast as we can get there. Some of the other states, they're implementing their laws. They're stopping, like in Ohio, kind of at natural gas, and they're using a lot of natural gas because that's better than coal. It's better than coal, but it's not fully renewable like solar and wind. And so we'd like to see all these CCA states really going for the full renewable. But the point here is when a CCA law is passed, the citizens have the right in their cities or in their counties to set up community choice agencies that are agencies that are nonprofits run by elected people from those areas, from the city councils and boards of supervisors. And the agency is like a joint power authority that orders energy for the city or the county or however big the area is, and they order the energy and they don't order nuclear. We just formed one that's three counties big, and we're going to work on adding a fourth county. And our agency now is not going to order any nuclear power, and it's not going to order any coal. It will order natural gas until it can get enough solar and wind that it doesn't have to. And in the first year, which will be 2018, of our ordering our own energy, we will double the amount of renewables that our power customers will receive. In other words, all of our consumers who are now receiving from Pacific Gas and Electric, Pacific Gas and Electric will continue to manage the grid and deliver the energy, but we will order what that energy will be. And we will order twice as much renewable energy. So our customers are going to receive 60% renewable energy in 2018, whereas in 2017 they only received about 28% renewable energy. So it brings a lot of carbon down very quickly. Over a period of 10 years in our three counties, we will not put up 313 million pounds of carbon that we would have put up, because we will be ordering more and more renewable for all of our power companies or all of our power customers. Now, we're trying to get CCAs functioning in all of California, over a period of the next 3 to 5 years. And it's moving very quickly in this state. It's very, very important, because power is one of the key ways that that global warming is generated, by the fossil fuel emissions and stuff that come from power plants. So dealing with power is very important. Dealing with transportation, ground transportation, like the auto companies are doing, and like the Elon Musk people are doing. This is very, very important. That's another one of them. Dealing with shipping across the ocean and dealing with planes. All of these are fossil fuel emitters, and they're all really key to driving climate change. And
Now I'm in here in Los Angeles. And how do we form a CCA and do that down here?
Okay, well, the process that took place here in Monterey Bay Community Power, which is the name of our agency, was faster than what took place in San Francisco or Marin or Sonoma, where they came previous to us. We did it in about 3.5 years. It took us 3.5 years. It started usually by people who are associated with the Board of Supervisors, and a feasibility study is done. The area is identified in terms of what is the scope of the area. Is it going to be the city, the county, two counties? What is it going to be? And people who represent those areas in different ways come together, form a committee, and then they start working. And they hire professionals. They have to raise some money so they can hire professionals. They may get government money, government grants, private, and they hire a feasibility study to occur, and at the end of that, the study shows them whether it's feasible to do this. And they're all, you know, normally it's very feasible, and not only does it bring up renewables, but it keeps the price the same, and it's all a win-win-win. The only people who lose are the people who are stockholders for the electrical company, PG&E. They don't get as many profits because the ordering company, our Monterey Bay Community Power Agency, is nonprofit. So any profits that come from our work go into a bank account and can be used to start new solar farms and new wind farms locally, create jobs, and have locally sourced energy. So it's all win-win-win, and people can do this And then after the feasibility study, and after they know they can that it's going to work and how it's going to work, then they start getting their elected bodies to vote for it, because you have to have your city council vote or your board of supervisors or however many. We had 18 cities and 3 counties that we were lobbying and organizing and getting to vote to come into this new way of ordering power, our Monterey Bay community power. And we got all but 2 very small cities. We got 3 counties and the rest of the cities, 16 cities, and we are going to be servicing a huge amount of people in these 3 counties with increasingly renewable energy. It's fabulous. It's absolutely the fastest way to bring down emissions when it comes to power. We're also working with the diocese here, the Catholic diocese in these 3 counties, to green and put solar on their churches and schools. And there are other people working on figuring out how to get solar panels on top of parking lots so that all day long those parking lots are bringing in solar energy, and it's going into the grid. So there are different ways that we can do it. I'm sorry?
The parking lot solar collectors are also going to charge electric cars that are parked there all day, and that's a big part. All right, this is a big deal, Sarah Nelson and Danny Sheehan. It's fantastic. I'm going to talk to you in the future more about the CCA, especially because I'm here in Los Angeles. We want to gut the Department of Water and Power here because they own 10% share in the Palo Verde nuclear plants, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yes.
I mean, it's insane. So the CCA, Sarah, where do people write you and Danny to get a clarification on how to do a CCA?
I would say write to the Green Power .ngo, Green Power, it's all one word, .ngo. That's one place. The other place is to write to the Romero Institute .org. And I just put a packet up on, see, that's our nonprofit. We have 2 major projects under our nonprofit. One is Green Power NGO, and one is Lakota Law. .org, but we're all under Romero Institute, which used to be the Christic Institute, and I've just put a packet into a section of the Romero Institute that tells everybody how to do these things. So
I will put it up at greenpower.org too, but .ngo, obviously.
Yeah, just ask for the packet, and I'll make sure that the packet that we just put together gets to them.
Okay, great, great, great. So you guys are such great guests. I mean, I could have you on for hours and hours. I do want to do one thing. I did this with Dan Ellsberg. I had Dan Ellsberg to lunch once to specifically ask him if Richard Nixon told him that Richard Nixon would have used nuclear weapons in Vietnam had it not been for the anti-war movement. And Daniel Ellsberg confirmed for me in person that Nixon definitely would have used nuclear weapons in Vietnam had it not been for the anti-war movement. So Danny Sheehan and Sarah Nelson, I want to ask you a quick question. We don't have time to get deep into Iran-Contra because I want to talk about cancer. But Danny Sheehan and Sarah Nelson, is it true that, and I got to get this straight here because it's so mind-boggling, it's like taking a drug talking about this. What? Is it true that the Reagan administration sold weapons to Iran illegally, took the profits, gave the profits to the Contra right-wing fascists in Nicaragua to use against the government, and that in Nicaragua, the duly elected government, and that simultaneously the Contras are dealing cocaine, which they brought into Los Angeles and the United States, which was turned into crack, and which was used by Ronald Reagan to complete the circle as an excuse for the drug war to put millions of black people in jail in the United States. Is that an accurate portrayal?
Yes.
So what
yes.
drug are we all on? I mean, God.
No, it was shocking. When we were working on the Iran-Contra case, it was one of the things that every day used to drive me crazy was realizing how that circle was occurring and how our people were getting so many people were getting addicted to crack and cocaine all over the country. It was pouring in to the country every year, more and more and more and more pounds. And it was funding the illegal war against Nicaragua, and it was funding the illegal weapons that were being shipped, and so the drugs were funding the guns and the illegal war. It was just astonishing how little the established order cared about our kids and our families.
It was It'll be very interesting, Sluggo, that right on the 29th here, next not this coming weekend, but the next weekend, this whole movie is opening with Tom Cruise playing Barry Seal, and we don't know exactly what the movie's going to say, but the fact of the matter is, it's going to make perfectly clear, I hope, that Barry Seal was in fact smuggling cocaine up into the United States, working directly with the off-the-shelf enterprise of Oliver North. And he was flying in and out of the airport in Mena, Arkansas, that was being supervised by Richard Secord, the U.S. Air Force Major General, who retired and ended up running the air wing of the off-the-shelf enterprise. And they were directly smuggling cocaine massively into the United States. Now, it's not clear. Almost every movie we've ever seen changes the factual information that was made transparently clear during all of the investigations that we did, all the evidence, the sworn testimony that we presented in front of John Kerry and the Senate Select Committee on Narcotics and Terrorism. You know, we overwhelmingly showed that was true. And John Kerry backed right out of that investigation, trying to pretend that they couldn't quite determine whether or not the high-level people in the administration knew that the people that they were using to smuggle guns down to the Contras were smuggling cocaine back into the United States. I sat directly with the assistant CIA station chief in Mexico City, a man by the name of Joseph Burkholder Smith, who sat right directly in me, person to person, face to face, told me directly that he was confronted when he was the deputy CIA station chief in Mexico City back in 1973 and 1974 with people from the narcotics trafficking operation looking him right in the face, telling him that if he was going to be allowed to be left on as the deputy CIA station chief, he had to stand back and allow the smuggling of cocaine in through Mexico into the United States to fund the war against our common enemies. I mean, and in fact, there's the fellow who was the DEA agent in charge at the Ilopango in El Salvador, Kiki Camarena, but another fellow. He was sending reports in daily to the DEA in Washington D.C. saying, "Look, here are photographs of them loading cocaine into the airplanes right here at the U.S. Air Force military base." In Ilopango, you know, to smuggle back into the United States, and the DEA ended up firing him to try to make him stop sending those reports in. So it's unequivocal. It is absolutely transparently clear that is exactly what they were doing, because they wanted to be able to help fund the weapons supply.
So when Nancy Reagan sat next to Ronnie there and said, "Just say no," what she was saying was, we're bringing in all this cocaine to support our fascist troops in Nicaragua, who were funded also by illegal weapons sales to the Ayatollah. But don't use the cocaine that we're bringing in."
Well, no, David, she was actually telling them, "Just say no to marijuana."
Oh, marijuana! God,
there was a wink and a nod. Okay, you can use the cocaine, but don't use the marijuana.
Right. Yeah, we make good money. We're not invested in the marijuana. So,
no, that's right. We aren't handling
that.
We
don't want you to use that.
But it's going to be very interesting that we'll be able to have our next conversation. We'll all get a chance to look at this movie. It's called Made in America, and it's the Tom Cruise movie about Barry Seal, who was a low-life slug who was, excuse me, Sluggo, but basically a low-life, you know, guy smuggling tons and tons of cocaine into the United States and deadly weapons down to the Contras, working directly for Richard Secord out of the airport in Mena, Arkansas. saw, and we know it. I don't know whether they're going to acknowledge it in the movie, or it's going to be like the Patriot Games, you know, written by Tom Clancy, where they try to pretend that the CIA was trying to stop the cocaine trafficking coming up out of South America.
Yeah,
it was just
like
a couple bad apples that ended up supporting it.
That's like that Mississippi burning where they tried to say the FBI was supporting the civil rights movement.
That's right. We're trying to help the civil rights movement.
You guys are just way too interesting, man. I could talk to you guys for hours and hours. It's ridiculous. I want to get now. Well, I mean, you couldn't make that stuff. Lewis Carroll, if Lewis Carroll had written Alice in Wonderland in a sequel describing the Contra thing, they would believe Alice in Wonderland and not what happened with all that. And
no,
course,
no, it's quite
Gary Webb. You know, Gary Webb wound up dying because he dared to point out that this cocaine was coming in. And now, of course, through the CIA, and now everybody acknowledges that Gary Webb, the only guy in history to commit suicide by
shooting himself
twice.
In the head twice.
Twice, yeah. That's an amazing
Well, but,
feat,
but you know, the source for Gary was, in fact, Gene Wheaton, one of our investigators, who we sent down to Mena, Arkansas, to actually investigate the operation there. And he is the guy, along with the IRS investigator that worked with him, who sat face-to-face with Bill Clinton when he was governor of Arkansas, and his attorney general sitting right in the meeting, and laid out the full details of everything that was going on down at Mena, Arkansas. And what happened is within a week, Bill Clinton, rather than doing anything about it, announced that he was running for the presidency and demonstrated
well,
to the off-the-shelf enterprise that he could play the game. He wasn't going to do anything about it.
Well, not only did he not do anything about it, he probably got a good cut out of the profits of all that.
No, I don't think that happened. Some of the hardcore right wing tries to say, but it's not true. He just basically, I think it was, he was demonstrating that, given that information, he just held it close to his vest and made clear to them that he knew what was going on. He wasn't going to do anything about it, so he could be trusted. You know, he could become president because he understood the importance of covert operations, even to the point of smuggling tons of cocaine in the United States, and he knew how to play the game.
Yeah, that, the game was
that's what's really going on.
And then he turned over the Democratic Party to the corporate Leadership Council.
Sure he did.
And that was
NAFTA. That's when he was there. I mean, that's that whole Democratic Leadership Conference. That's the whole thing that was done. Where they set the entire operation up right at the end of the Cold War. As soon as the Soviet Union withdrew from the Cold War, the Republican Party shifted hardcore to the full-scale, hardcore right-wing position that they had all the way back in the robber baron era, all the way up to 1917 before the Soviet Union arose. And then as soon as it went out of business, they went right straight back to being the hardcore right-wing robber barons that they are. And the Democratic Party said, what's the percentage in us staying over here 2 degrees to the right of, to the left of center? Let's shift over, you know, 25 degrees to the right of center. And then what choice does anybody have? All they're going to do is either vote for the hardcore crazies in the Republican Party, or everybody else is going to come and vote for us. But we will not allow any type of progressive option to be presented to the people, because we don't need to do that anymore. There's no socialist option available.
And that's why they had to crush Bernie Sanders and why
that's exactly why they
that's
did.
It's just unbelievable. Oh, listen, so I'm not going to talk about Karen Sokol with you today, because I want to save that for another show.
Okay.
Sarah Nelson, I got news yesterday. I have a friend named Peter Simon who's been fighting lung cancer. And, you know, lung cancer had a 5% survival rate. He was getting they mapped his DNA, and he got a very specific form of chemo. And I love this part. They also gave him cannabis suppositories. And he said the side effect of the cannabis suppositories was that he was stoned all the time. But, Sarah, you have successfully fought cancer, and I do want to give you a few minutes to talk about how you've done it and what people can learn from your amazing experience.
Well, I'll try. It's a lot, but I'll try to be very sort of specific about this. First of all, I had breast cancer in three places in one breast, in two places in another. And I also had a polyp in my colon that had grown and was cancerous. And it was you know, by the time they took it out, it was like 1 millimeter again away from breaking through the wall. So I was very fortunate to get it out of there just in time. If I had not taken sort of everything, responsibility, complete responsibility for myself, I probably would not be here. I think that's the first thing I would say to somebody is, I spent a week trying to figure out whether I wanted to live or not. Why was this happening? Why had I allowed my body, or somehow my body had gotten to the point where this had happened? And so I asked myself, do you want to be here? And by the end of the week, I had this, you know, very strong will to live, just rising up inside of me. So that's the first thing I think a person needs to do, because some people are unconsciously checking out. And you know, to win a battle against what I used to call the challenge, because I did not want to give it any power by naming it. So I always called it the health challenge. To win that battle, it's very important to have a very strong will to live. And then I realized I had to look at it physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. So I was examining these areas, and I had to take full responsibility. I was not a victim. I was not somebody this had happened to. You know, I was everything about me had resulted in this, and I had to look at each one of the parts and see what needed to be adjusted to have a healthy life. So that's, you know, how I would start to answer your question. But then very specific things took place in each one of those categories. On the physical level, I respect surgery, but you have to find really good surgeons that are really good and they do their work well, and I did find that. The first surgeon I had, if I had stayed with that person, I probably wouldn't be here, because he wasn't even looking in the second breast. It was a health person that I went to a health conference on this health challenge, and with Danny, the two of us drove down to Los Angeles and went to this conference and talked to this guy that we'd heard about, and he said, look, I'm going to tell you right now, you probably have it in the other breast right now. And I went, what? So then when I went back home, I went to a better hospital and had them do a more sensitive x-ray, and sure enough, I had it in the second as well. So I got myself scheduled to have a double mastectomy right away, as fast as I could get it. I had no illusions or attachments to keeping my breasts under the circumstances. By that time, I knew this stuff spread so easily, it could be spreading just from the biopsies that they're doing. So, you know, I just wanted to get it out of there. So within 6 weeks, I had had the double mastectomy, and then the challenge was, okay, how do I change the entire environment in my body so it's anti-cancer? And I did a lot of reading and stuff, and I realized cancer lives on sugar. So you need to get rid of anything that turns into sugar from your diet. White rice turns into sugar. You know, all things that are carbohydrates that basically turn into sugar go. And you end up eating more the right kinds of proteins for you, and a difference for different people. Some people want tofu. Some people want steak. But you have whatever the right proteins are for your self to feel well and healthy, and then also vegetables, and some fruits that are not very sweet. And that's basically, and it was mostly vegetables. And so I had these charts on the wall of alkaline and acidic foods, and the more alkaline your food is, the less cancer thrives. And so the less sugar and carbohydrates you eat, the less cancer thrives. It doesn't live on oxygen like all of our other cells do. It lives on sugar, and it likes an acidic environment. And a lot of things that we like are acidic, but you just get those charts and put them up on the wall. They're on the internet, of acidic and alkaline food charts, and you just stay over in the alkaline as much as you can. I was sure that I had a clean water supply. You have to have a clean water supply. I walked 40 minutes a day to make sure that I was getting oxygen It hates oxygen. It doesn't like oxygen. So I was breathing and walking and jumping up and down on a little, you know, one of those little trampoline things and walking 40 minutes every day and breathing. That gives you the exercise. It keeps your lymph system going to move out toxins. It also gives you the oxygen and the vitamin D that you get from the sun. So I was doing that part. I was doing spiritual work with prayers, and I was staying positive. You know, every day I was thankful for the fact that I was alive, that I was learning how to deal with this, that it was today was better than yesterday, and, you know, it was just a very positive, grateful attitude, which is a spiritual position, I think, that is extremely important to overcoming a health challenge like that.
Unfortunately, we got to go. I'm going to have to continue this with you. Sarah Nelson,
okay.
Danny Sheehan, you're the greatest. Thank you so much. You'll have to
here
come
go,
back
Sluggo.
And see you next time in Solar
thank
Tokyo.
Thank you. And thank you,
thank
Sarah.
You, buddy. Keep up your
okay.
great work, both of you.
Will we bid them?